Ulysses, Disc 11.
Episode 9. Urbane, to comfort them, the Quaker librarian purred. And we have we not, those priceless pages of Wilhelm Meister, a great poet on a great brother poet, a hesitating soul taking arms against a sea of troubles, torn by conflicting doubts as one sees in real life. He came a step, a syncopace forward, on Neat's leather creaking, and a step backward a syncopace on the solemn floor. A noiseless attendant, setting open the door but slightly, made him a noiseless beck. "Directly," said he, creaking to go, albeit lingering. "The beautiful, ineffectual dreamer who comes to grief against hard facts. One always feels that Goethe's judgments are so true in the larger analysis." Twy creakingly analysis, he carantoed off. Bald, most zealous by the door, he gave his large ear all to the attendant's words, heard them, and was gone. Two left. "Monsieur de la Police," Stephen sneered, "was alive 15 minutes before his death." "Have you found those six brave medicals?" John Eglinton asked with elder's gall. "To write Paradise Lost at your dictation. The Sorrows of Satan, he calls it." Smile. Smile Cranley's smile. "First he tickled her, then he patted her, then he passed the female catheter, for he was a medical jolly old medi." "I feel you would need one more for Hamlet. Seven is dear to the mystic mind. The Shining Seven, W.B. calls them." Glitter-eyed, his rufous skull close to his green-capped desk lamp, sought the face bearded amid dark greener shadow. An olive, holy-eyed. He laughed low, a sizer's laugh of Trinity. Unanswered. "Orchestral Satan, weeping many a rood, tears such as angels weep. Ed egli avea del cul fato trombeta." "He holds my follies hostage." Cranley's 11 true Wicklow men to free their sireland. Gap-toothed Kathleen, her 4 beautiful green fields, the stranger in her house. And one more to hail him. "Ave, Rabbi." The Tinahili 12. In the shadow of the glen, he cooees for them. "My soul's youth I gave him, night by night. Godspeed, good hunting. Mulligan has my telegram. Folly. Persist." "Our young Irish bards," John Eglinton censured, "have yet to create a figure which the world will set beside Saxon Shakespeare's Hamlet, though I admire him, as old Ben did, on this side idolatry." "All these questions are purely academic," Russell oracled out of his shadow. "I mean whether Hamlet is Shakespeare or James the First or Essex." "Clergymen's discussions on the historicity of Jesus. Art has to reveal to us ideas, formless spiritual essences. The supreme question about a work of art is out of how deep a life does it spring. The painting of Gustave Moreau is the painting of ideas. The deepest poetry of Shelley, the words of Hamlet, bring our minds into contact with the eternal wisdom. Plato's world of ideas. All the rest is the speculation of schoolboys for schoolboys.
A.E. has been telling some Yankee interviewer, "Well, tarnation strike me.
The schoolmen were schoolboys first," Stephen said super politely. "Aristotle was once Plato's schoolboy."
"And has remained so, one should hope," John Eglinton sedately said.
"One can see him a model schoolboy with his diploma under his arm." He laughed again at the now smiling bearded face. "Formless, spiritual, Father, Word, and Holy Breath, All-Father, the heavenly man, Jesus Christos, magician of the beautiful, the Logos who suffers in us at every moment, this verily is that. I am the fire upon the altar. I am the sacrificial butter."
Dunlop, judge, the noblest Roman of them all. A.E. Arvel, the name ineffable. In heaven height. K.H., their master, whose identity is no secret to adepts. Brothers of the great White Lodge, always watching to see if they can help. The Christ with the bride sister, moisture of light, born of an ensouled virgin, repentant Sophia, departed to the plain of Buddhi. The life esoteric is not for ordinary person. O.P. must work off bad karma first. Mrs. Cooper Oakley once glimpsed our very illustrious sister H.P.B.'s elemental. Oh, fie, out, aunt, fooey teufel. You naughtn't to look, missus, so you naughtn't, when a lady's a-showing of her elemental. Mr. Best entered, tall, young, mild, light. He bore in his hand with grace a notebook, new, large, clean, bright. "That model schoolboy," Stephen said, "would find Hamlet's musings about the afterlife of his princely soul, the improbable, insignificant, and undramatic monologue, as shallow as Plato's."
John Eglinton, frowning, said, waxing wroth, "Upon my word, it makes my blood boil to hear anyone compare Aristotle with Plato."
"Which of the two," Stephen asked, "would have banished me from his commonwealth?"
"Unsheath your dagger definitions. Hoarseness is the whatness of all horse. Streams of tendency and eons they worship. God, noise in the street, very peripatetic. Space, what you damn well have to see. Through spaces smaller than red globules of man's blood, they creepy crawl after Blake's buttocks into eternity, of which this vegetable world is but a shadow. Hold to the now, the here, through which all future plunges to the past."
Mr. Best came forward, amiable, towards his colleague. "Haynes is gone," he said.
"Is he?"
"I was showing him Jubanville's book. He's quite enthusiastic, don't you know, about Hyde's Love Songs of Connaught. I couldn't bring him in to hear the discussion. He's gone to Gill's to buy it."
"Bound thee forth my booklet quick to greet the callous public. Writ, I ween, 'twas not my wish, in lean unlovely English. "The peat smoke is going to his head," John Eglinton opined.
"We feel in England, penitent thief gone. I smoked his baccy, green twinkling stone, an emerald set in the ring of the sea.
People do not know how dangerous love songs can be," the Auric Egg of Russell warned occultly.
"The movements which work revolutions in the world are born out of the dreams and visions in a peasant's heart on the hillside. For them the earth is not an exploitable ground, but the living mother. The rarefied air of the academy and the arena produce the six-shilling novel, the music-hall song. France produces the finest flower of corruption in Mallarmé, but the desirable life is revealed only to the poor of heart, the life of Homer's Phaeacians."
From these words, Mr. Best turned a non-offending face to Stephen.
"Mallarmé, don't you know," he said, "has written those wonderful prose poems Stephen McKenna used to read to me in Paris. The one about Hamlet. He says, 'Il se promène lisant Olive de lui-même.' Don't you know, reading the book of himself. He describes Hamlet given in a French town, don't you know, a provincial town. They advertised it. His free hand graciously wrote tiny signs in air. Hamlet. Où le distrait? Pièce de Shakespeare."
He repeated to John Eglinton's new-gathered frown,
"P.S. de Shakespeare, don't you know? It's so French. The French point of view. Hamlet, who..."
"The absent-minded beggar," Stephen ended. John Eglinton laughed.
"Yes, I suppose it would be," he said. "Excellent people, no doubt, but distressingly short-sighted in some matters."
"Sumptuous and stagnant exaggeration of murder." "A death's man of the soul, Robert Greene called him," Stephen said. "Not for nothing was he a butcher's son, wielding the sledded poleaxe and spitting in his palms. 9 lives are taken off for his father's one. Our Father who art in purgatory. Khaki Hamlets don't hesitate to shoot. The blood-boltered shambles in Act 5 is a forecast of the concentration camp sung by Mr. Swinburne. Cranley, I, his mute orderly, following battles from afar. Whelps and dams of murderous foes whom none but we had spared. Between the Saxon smile and Yankee yawp, the devil and the deep sea.
He will have it that Hamlet is a ghost story," John Eglinton said, for Mr. Best's behoof. "Like the fat boy in Pickwick, he wants to make our flesh creep."
"List, oh, list. My flesh hears him creeping, hears. If thou didst ever..."
"What is a ghost?" Stephen said with tingling energy. "One who has faded into impalpability through death, through absence, through change of manners. Elizabethan London lay as far from Stratford as corrupt Paris lies from virgin Dublin. Who is the ghost from Limbo Patrum, returning to the world that has forgotten him? Who is King Hamlet?" John Eglinton shifted his spare body, leaning back to judge, lifted.
"It is this hour of a day in mid-June," Stephen said, begging with a swift glance their hearing. "The flag is up on the playhouse by the bankside. The bear Sackerson growls in the pit near it. Paris Garden, canvas climbers who sailed with Drake chew their sausages among the groundlings. Local collar, work in all you know. Make them accomplices." Shakespeare has left the Huguenot's house in Silver Street and walks by the Swan Mews along the riverbank. But he does not stay to feed the pen, chivying her game of cygnets towards the rushes. The Swan of Avon has other thoughts. Composition of place. Ignatius Loyola, make haste to help me. The play begins. A player comes on under the shadow, made up in the cast-off mail of a court book. A well-set man with a bass voice. It is the ghost, the king. A king and no king. And the player is Shakespeare, who has studied Hamlet all the years of his life, which were not vanity in order to play the part of the spectre. He speaks the words to Burbage, the young player who stands before him beyond the rack of cerecloth, calling him by name. Hamlet, I am thy father's spirit, bidding him list. To a son he speaks, the son of his soul, the prince, young Hamlet, and to the son of his body, Hamnet Shakespeare, who has died in Stratford, that his namesake may live for ever. Is it possible that that player Shakespeare, a ghost by absence, and in the vesture of buried Denmark, a ghost by death, speaking his own words to his own son's name. Had Hamnet Shakespeare lived, he would have been Prince Hamlet's twin. Is it possible, I want to know, or probable, that he did not draw or foresee the logical conclusion of those premises? You are the dispossessed son. I am the murdered father. Your mother is the guilty queen. Anne Shakespeare, born Hathaway.
But this prying into the family life of a great man, Russell began impatiently. Art thou there, Trupenny? Interesting only to the parish clerk. I mean we have the plays. I mean when we read the poetry of King Lear, what is it to us how the poet lived? As for living, our servants can do that for us, Villiers de Lisle has said. Peeping and prying into green-room gossip of the day, the poet's drinking, the poet's debts. We have King Lear, and it is immortal. Mr. Best's face appealed to, agreed. Flow over them with your waves and with your waters. Mananon, Mananon, mock Lear. How now, sirrah? That pound he lent you when you were hungry. Marry, I wanted it. Take thou this noble. Go to. You spent most of it in Georgina Johnson's bed, clergyman's daughter. Agon bite of inwit. Do you intend to pay it back? Oh, yes. When? Now? Well, no. When, then? I paid my way. I paid my way.
Steady on. He's from beyant Boyne Water, the northeast corner. You owe it.
Wait 5 months. Molecules all change. I am other eye now. Other eye got pound. Buzz, buzz. But I, entelechy, form of forms. Am I by memory?
because under ever-changing forms, I that sinned and prayed and fasted, a child con me saved from Pandies, I, A-E-I-O-U.
Do you mean to fly in the face of the tradition of 3 centuries?
John Eglinton's carping voice asked.
Her ghost at least has been laid forever. She died, for literature at least, before she was born.
She died, Stephen retorted, 67 years after she was born. She saw him into and out of the world. She took his first embraces. She bore his children, and she laid pennies on his eyes to keep his eyelids closed when he lay on his deathbed.
Mother's deathbed. Candle. The sheeted mirror. Who brought me into this world lies there. Bronze-lidded. Under few cheap flowers. Liliata rutilantium. I wept alone.
John Eglinton looked in the tangled glowworm of his lamp.
The world believes that Shakespeare made a mistake, he said, and got out of it as quickly and as best he could.
Bosh! Stephen said rudely.
A man of genius makes no mistakes. His errors are volitional and are the portals of discovery.
Portals of discovery opened to let in the Quaker librarian, soft, creak-footed, bald, eared, and assiduous. A shrew, John Eglinton said shrewdly, is not a useful portal of discovery. One should imagine. What useful discovery did Socrates learn from Xantippe?
Dialectic, Stephen answered, and from his mother how to bring thoughts into the world.
What he learnt from his other wife, Myrto, absit nomen, Socratidians epipsychidion, no man, not a woman, will ever know. But neither the midwife's lore nor the cord lectures saved him from the archons of Sinn Féin and their nagging of hemlock.
But Anne Hathaway,
Mr. Best's quiet voice said forgetfully.
Yes, we seem to be forgetting her, as Shakespeare himself forgot her.
His look went from brooder's beard to carper's skull, to remind, to chide them not unkindly, then to the bald pink lollard custard, guiltless though maligned.
He had a good groat's worth of wit, Stephen said, and no truant memory. He carried a memory in his wallet as he trudged to Romeville, whistling The Girl I Left Behind Me.
If the earthquake did not time it, we should know where to place poor Watt, sitting in his form, the cry of hounds, the studded bridle and her blue windows. That memory, Venus and Adonis, lay in the bedchamber of every light of love in London. Is Catherine the Shrew ill-favoured? Hortensio calls her young and beautiful. Do you think the writer of Anthony and Cleopatra, a passionate pilgrim, had his eyes in the back of his head that he chose the ugliest doxy in all Warwickshire to lie withal? Good. He left her and gained the world of men. But his boy women are the women of a boy. Their life, thought, speech are lent them by males.
He chose badly?
He was chosen, it seems to me. If others have their will, Anne Hathaway. By cock she was to blame.
She put the commether on him, sweet and 26,
the grey-eyed goddess who bends over the boy Adonis, stooping to conquer as prologue to the swelling act, is a bold-faced Stratford wench who tumbles in a cornfield a lover younger than herself.
And my turn? When? Come.
Ryfield, Mr. Bess said brightly, gladly raising his new book, gladly, brightly. He murmured then, with blonde delight for all, between the acres of the Rye, these pretty country folk would lie.
Paris, the well-pleased pleaser.
A tall figure in bearded homespun rose from shadow and unveiled its cooperative watch.
I am afraid I am due at the homestead.
Whither away? Exploitable ground.
Are you going? John Eglinton's active eyebrows asked. Shall we see you at Moore's tonight? Piper is coming.
Piper, Mr. Best piped. Is Piper back?
Peter Piper pecked a peck of pickled pepper.
I don't know if I can. Thursday, we have our meeting. If I can get away in time.
Yogi Bogi box in Dawson Chambers. Isis unveiled. Their Polly book we tried to pawn. Cross-legged under an umbral umbershoot, he thrones an Aztec logos, functioning on astral levels, their oversoul Mahamahatma. The faithful hermetists await the light, ripe for chelaship, ring round about him. Louis H. Victory, T. Caulfield Irwin.
Lotus ladies tend them i' the eyes, their pineal glands aglow. Filled with his god, he thrones, booed under plantain, gulfer of souls, engulfer. He soul, she soul, shoals of souls, engulfed with wailing creek cries, whirled, whirling, they bewail.
In quintessential triviality, for years in this flesh case, a she-soul dwelt.
They say we are to have a literary surprise, the Quaker librarian said, friendly and earnest. Mr. Russell, rumour has it, is gathering together a sheaf of our younger poet's verses. We are all looking forward anxiously. Anxiously, he glanced in the cone of lamplight where three faces lighted, shone.
See this. Remember.
Stephen looked down on a wide headless corbeen hung on his ashplant handle over his knee.
My casque and sword. Touch lightly with two index fingers. Aristotle's experiment. One or two. Necessity is that in virtue of which it is impossible that one can be otherwise. Argal. One hat is one hat. Listen.
Young Colum and Starkey. George Roberts is doing the commercial part. Longworth will give it a good puff in the express.
Oh, will he? I liked Colum's Drover.
Yes, I think he has that queer thing, genius.
Do you think he has genius, really?
Yeats admired his line, as in Wild Earth a Grecian vase.
Did he?
I hope you'll be able to come tonight. Malachy Mulligan is coming too. Moore asked him to bring Haynes. Did you hear Miss Mitchell's joke about Moore and Martin? That Moore is Martin's wild oats. Awfully clever, isn't it? They remind one of Don Quixote and Sancho Panza.
Our national epic has yet to be written, Dr. Sigerson says.
Moore is the man for it, a knight of the rueful countenance here in Dublin.
With a saffron kilt.
O'Neill Russell? Oh, yes, he must speak the grand old tongue.
And his Dulcinea?
James Stevens is doing some clever sketches. We are becoming important, it seems.
Cordelia. Cordolio. Lear's loneliest daughter. Nuke Shotten. Now, your best French polish.
Thank you very much, Mr. Russell,
Stephen said, rising.
If you will be so kind as to give the letter to Mr. Norman. Oh, yes. If he considers it important, it will go in. We have so much correspondence.
I understand, Stephen said. Thanks.
God ill you.
The pig's paper. Bullock befriending.
Singh has promised me an article for Dana, too. Are we going to be read? I feel we are. The Gaelic League wants something in Irish. I hope you will come round tonight. Bring Starkey.
Stephen sat down. The Quaker librarian came from the leave-takers, blushing. His mask said,
Mr. Dedalus, your views are most illuminating.
He creaked to and fro, tiptoeing up nearer heaven by the altitude of a chopine, and, covered by the noise of outgoing, said low,
Is it your view, then, that she was not faithful to the poet?
Alarmed face asks me, Why did he come? Courtesy, or an inward light?
Where there is a reconciliation, Stephen said, there must have been first a sundering.
Yes. Christ fox in leather trews, hiding, a runaway in blighted tree forks from hue and cry. Knowing no vixen, walking lonely in the chase. Women he won to him, tender people, a whore of Babylon, ladies of justices, bully tapsters' wives, fox and geese, and in new place a slack dishonoured body that once was comely, once as sweet as fresh as cinnamon, now her leaves falling all, bare, frightened of the narrow grave and unforgiven.
Yes! So you think...
The door closed behind the outgoer. Rest suddenly possessed the discreet vaulted cell. Rest of warm and brooding air. A vestal's lamp. Here he ponders things that were not. What Caesar would have lived to do had he believed the soothsayer. What might have been... Possibilities of the possible as possible. Things not known. What name Achilles bore when he lived among women. Coffined thoughts around me. In mummy cases, embalmed in spice of words. Thoth. God of libraries. A bird god, moony crowned. And I heard the voice of that Egyptian high priest. In painted chambers loaded with title books. They are still, once quick in the brains of men. Still, but a niche of death is in them, to tell me in my ear a maudlin tale, urge me to wreak their will.
Certainly, John Eglinton mused, of all great men he is the most enigmatic. We know nothing but that he lived and suffered, not even so much. Others abide our question. A shadow hangs over all the rest.
But Hamlet is so personal, isn't it? Mr. Bess pleaded.
I mean a kind of private paper, don't you know, of his private life. I mean, I don't care a button, don't you know, who is killed or who is guilty.
He rested an innocent book on the edge of the desk, smiling his defiance.
His private papers in the original. Tá an bád ar an tír. Táim ima shagart.
Put Berla on it, Little John.
Quoth Little John Eglinton, I was prepared for paradoxes from what Malachy Mulligan told us, but I may as well warn you that if you want to shake my belief that Shakespeare is Hamlet, you have a stern task before you.
Bear with me.
Stephen withstood the bane of miscreant eyes, glinting stern under wrinkled brows.
A basilisk. E quando vede l'uomo la tosca. Messer Brunetto, I thank thee for the word.
As we are Mother Dana, weave and unweave our bodies, Stephen said. From day to day, their molecules shuttled to and fro, so does the artist weave and unweave his image. And as the mole on my right breast is where it was when I was born, though all my body has been woven of new stuff time after time, so, through the ghost of the unquiet father, the image of the unliving son looks forth. In the intense instant of imagination, when the mind, Shelley says, is a fading coal, that which I was is that which I am, and that which, in possibility, I may come to be. So, in the future, the sister of the past, I may see myself as I sit here now, but by reflection from that which I then shall be.
Drummond of Hawthornden helped you at that style.
Yes, Mr. Best said youngly. I feel Hamlet quite young. The bitterness might be from the father, but the passages with Ophelia are surely from the son.
Has the wrong sow by the lug? He is in my father. I am in his son.
That mole is the last to go, Stephen said, laughing.
John Eglinton made a nothing-pleasing mow.
If that were the birthmark of genius, he said, genius would be a drug in the market.
The plays of Shakespeare's later years, which Renan admired so much, breathe another spirit.
The spirit of reconciliation.
The Quaker librarian breathed.
There can be no reconciliation, Stephen said, if there has not been a sundering.
Said that.
If you want to know what are the events which cast their shadow over the hell of time of King Lear, Othello, Hamlet, Troilus and Cressida, look to see when and how the shadow lifts. What softens the heart of a man shipwrecked in storms dire, tried like another Ulysses, Pericles, Prince of Tyre?
Head, red cone-capped, buffeted, brine-blinded.
A child, a girl, placed in his arms, Marina. The leaning of sophists towards the byparts of Apocrypha is a constant quantity, John Eglinton detected. The high roads are dreary, but they lead to the town.
Good bacon, gone musty. Shakespeare, bacon's wild oats. Cipher jugglers going the high roads. Seekers on the great quest. What town, good masters? Mummed in names. A.E. Eon. McGee. John Eglinton. East of the sun, west of the moon. Tirnanog. Booted the twain and staved.
How many miles to Dublin? 60, sir. Will we be there by candlelight?
Mr. Branders accepts it, Stephen said, as the first play of the closing period.
Does he?
What does Mr. Sidney Lee, or Mr. Simon Lazarus, as some aver his name is, say of it?
Marina, Stephen said, a child of storm. Miranda, a wonder. Perdita, that which was lost. What was lost is given back to him, his daughter's child.
My dearest wife, Pericles says, was like this maid. Will any man love the daughter if he has not loved the mother?
The art of being a grandfather, Mr. Best gan murmur.
L'art d'être grand-père.
Will he not see, reborn in her, with the memory of his own youth added, another image?
Do you know what you're talking about? Love, yes. A word known to all men.
Amor vero aliquid aliqui bonum vult unde et ea quae concupissimus.
His own image to a man with that queer thing genius is the standard of all experience, material and moral. Such an appeal will touch him. The images of other males of his blood will repel him. He will see in them grotesque attempts of nature to foretell or to repeat himself.
The benign forehead of the Quaker librarian enkindled rosily with hope.
I hope Mr. Dedalus will work out his theory for the enlightenment of the public. And we ought to mention another Irish commentator, Mr. George Bernard Shaw. Nor should we forget Mr. Frank Harris. His articles on Shakespeare in the Saturday Review were surely brilliant. Oddly enough, he too draws for us an unhappy relation with the dark lady of the sonnets. The favoured rival is William Herbert, Earl of Pembroke. I own that if the poet must be rejected, such a rejection would seem more in harmony with the, what shall I say, our notions of what ought not to have been. Felicitously, he ceased, and held a meek head among them. Orc's egg, prize of their fray.
He thous and these her with grave husband words.
Dost love Miriam? Dost love thy man?
That may be too, Stephen said. There's a saying of Goethe's which Mr. McGee likes to quote. Beware of what you wish for in youth, because you will get it in middle life. Why does he send to one who is a buona roba, a bay where all men ride, a maid of honour with a scandalous girlhood, a lordling to woo for him? He was himself a lord of language, and had made himself a coistrel gentleman, and he had written Romeo and Juliet. Why? Belief in himself has been untimely killed. He was overborne in a cornfield first, a rye field, I should say, and he will never be a victor in his own eyes after, nor play victoriously the game of laugh and lie down. Assumed Don Giovannism will not save him. No later undoing will undo the first undoing. The tusk of the boar has wounded him there where love lies a-bleeding. If the shrew is worsted, yet there remains to her woman's invisible weapon. There is, I feel, in the words, some goad of the flesh driving him into a new passion, a darker shadow of the first, darkening even his own understanding of himself. A like fate
awaits him, and the two rages commingle in a whirlpool. They list, and in the porches of their ears I pour. The soul has been before stricken mortally, a poison poured in the porch of a sleeping ear. But those who are done to death in sleep cannot know the manner of their quell, unless their Creator endow their souls with that knowledge in the life to come. The poisoning and the beast with two backs that urged it, King Hamlet's ghost could not know of, were he not endowed with knowledge by his Creator. That is why the speech, his lean, unlovely English, is always turned elsewhere, backward. Ravisher and ravished, what he would but would not. Go with him from Lucrece's blue-circled ivory globes to Imogen's breast, bare with its mole sink-spotted. He goes back, weary of the creation he has piled up to hide him from himself, an old dog licking an old sore. But because loss is his gain, he passes on towards eternity in undiminished personality, untaught by the wisdom he has written or by the laws he has revealed. His beaver is up. He is a ghost, a shadow now. The wind by Elsinore's rocks, or what you will, the sea's voice, a voice heard only in the heart of him who is the substance of his shadow, the Son consubstantial with the Father. Amen, was responded from the doorway. Hast thou found me, O mine enemy? On track. A ribald face, sullen as a dean's, Buck Mulligan came forward, then, blithe and motley, towards the greeting of their smiles. My telegram. You were speaking of the gaseous vertebrate, if I mistake not, he asked of Stephen. Primrose-vested, he greeted gaily with his doffed Panama as with a bauble. They make him welcome. Was du Fairlocks wirst du noch dienen. Brood of mockers, Photius, pseudo Malachi, Johann Most. He who himself begot, Midler the Holy Ghost, and himself sent himself, Agenbayer, between himself and others. Who, put upon by his fiends, stripped and whipped, was nailed like bat to barn door, starved on cross tree. Who let him bury, stood up, harrowed hell, fared into heaven, and there these 1900 years sitteth on the right hand of his own self, but yet shall come in the latter day to doom the quick and dead, when all the quick shall be dead already.
Gloria in excelsis Deo.
He lifts his hands, veils fall. Oh, flowers, bells with bells with bells acquiring.
Yes, indeed, the Quaker librarian said. A most instructive discussion. Mr. Mulligan, I'll be bound, has his theory too of the play and of Shakespeare. All sides of life should be represented.
He smiled on all sides equally. Buck Mulligan thought, puzzled.
Shakespeare, he said. I seem to know the name.
A flying sunny smile rayed in his loose features.
To be sure, he said, remembering brightly. The chap that writes like sing.
Mr. Best turned to him.
Haynes missed you, he said.
Did you meet him? He'll see you after at the DBC. He's gone to Gill's to buy Hyde's Love Songs of Connacht.
I came through the museum, Buck Mulligan said. Was he here?
The Bard's fellow countrymen, John Eglinton answered, are rather tired, perhaps, of our brilliances of theorising. I hear that an actress played Hamlet for the 408th time last night in Dublin. Vining held that the prince was a woman. Has no one made him out to be an Irishman? Judge Barton, I believe, is searching for some clues. He swears, His Highness, not His Lordship, by St. Patrick. The most brilliant of all is that story of Wilde's, Mr. Best said, lifting his brilliant notebook. That portrait of Mr. W.H., where he proves that the sonnets were written by a Willie Hughes, a man all hues.
For Willie Hughes, is it not? The Quaker librarian asked.
Or Hughie Wills, Mr. William himself. W.H., who am I?
I mean for Willie Hughes, Mr. Best said, amending his gloss easily. Of course it's all paradox, don't you know? Hughes and Hughes and Hughes, the colour. But it's so typical the way he works it out. It's the very essence of Wilde, don't you know? The light touch.
His glance touched their faces lightly as he smiled. A blonde Ephebe. Tame essence of Wilde. You're darned witty. 3 drams of Ishgibah you drank with Dan Deasy's ducats. How much did I spend? Oh, a few shillings. For a plump of pressmen. Humour wet and dry. Wit. You would give your 5 wits, you youth's proud livery he pranks in. Lineaments of gratified desire. There be many more. Take her for me, in pairing time. Jove, a cool rut time send them. Yea, yea, turtle dove her. Eve, naked wheat-bellied sin. A snake coils her. Fang in's kiss.
Do you think it's only a paradox? The Quaker librarian was asking. The mocker is never taken seriously when he is most serious.
They talked seriously of mocker's seriousness. Buck Mulligan's again heavy face eyed Stephen a while. Then, his head wagging, he came, drew a folded telegram from his pocket. His mobile read, swing with new delight.
Telegram, he said. What wonderful inspiration. Telegram, a paper ball.
He sat on a corner of the undesk, reading aloud, joyful.
The sentimentalist is he who'd enjoy incurring the immense ship a thing done. Signed, Dulles. Where did you launch it from? The Kips? No, College Green. Have you drunk the quid? The aunt is going to call on your substantial father.
Telegram. Malachy Mulligan, the ship, Lower Abbey Street. Oh, you peerless Moss Mummer. Oh, you priestified Kinchite.
Joyfully, he thrust a message and envelope into a pocket, but keened in a querulous bro.
It's what I'm telling you, Miss Honey. It's queer and sick we were, Haynes and myself, the time himself brought it in. 'Twas murmur we did for a gallus potion would rouse a friar, I'm thinking, and he limp with leching.
and we 1 hour and 2 hours and 3 hours in Connery's, sitting civil, waiting for pints apiece. He wailed. And we to be there, Mavrone, and you to be unbeknownst, sending us your conglomerations, the way we to have our tongues out a yard long, like the drouthy clerics do be fainting for a pussful.
Stephen laughed. Quickly, warningfully, Buck Mulligan bent down. The tramper Singh is looking for you, he said,
to murder you.
He heard you pissed on his hall door in Glasthule. He's out in Pamputis to murder you.
Me? Stephen exclaimed. That was your contribution to literature.
Buck Mulligan gleefully bent back, laughing to the dark, eavesdropping ceiling.
Murder you,
he laughed.
Harsh gargoyle face, that warred against me over our mess of hash of lights in Rue Saint-André-des-Arts. In words of words for words, palabras. Usheen with Patrick. Fawn man he met in Clamart Woods brandishing a wine bottle. C'est Vendredi Saint. Murdering Irish. His image wandering, he met. I mine. I met a fool in the forest.
Mr. Leicester,
an attendant said from the door ajar.
In which everyone can find his own. So Mr. Justice Madden in his diary of Master William Silence has found the hunting terms. Yes, what is it?
There's a gentleman here, sir,
the attendant said, coming forward and offering a card. From the Freeman. He wants to see the files of the Kilkenny people for last year.
Certainly, certainly, certainly. Is the gentleman...
He took the eager card, glanced, not saw, laid down unglanced, looked, asked, creaked, asked.
Is he a... Oh, there!
Brisk in a galliard he was off, out. In the daylit corridor he talked with voluble pains of zeal, in duty bound, most fair, most kind, most honest, broad brim.
This gentleman? Freeman's Journal? Kilkenny people? To be sure. Good day, sir. Kilkenny... We have, certainly.
A patient silhouette waited, listening.
All the leading provincial at Northern, Whig, Cork Examiner, Enniscorthy, the Guardian, last year, 1903. Will you please, Evans, conduct this gentleman? If you just follow the attend... Or please allow me, this way, please, sir.
Voluble, dutiful... He led the way to all the provincial papers, a bowing, dark figure following his hasty heels. The door closed.